always tweet us at 99.3 ESPN Radio. We might even tweet you back. This is Schemann and Schemann on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Schemann and Shepard, 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. This is a fun little groove. What is this, Chris?
This is We Like to Party from Venga Boys.
I have I've heard this somewhere before. I think I know what it is now.
Yep, I think you're right.
Six Flags.
Yeah, the old man.
Yeah, the old man, that's right. What's the nearest Six Flags around here?
We had Georgia.
Okay. We had one very close to my neighborhood in Los Angeles. And Daniel Snyder owned it at the time. In fact, he owned all of them for some time.
Is there a Six Flags Florida? I don't think so.
I can't think of one in Florida. Why would what kind of business model? I mean, you got Busch Gardens, I understand that. But with Disney World right here, why would you set up shop with anything else here in Florida?
Disney, Universal, and Islands of Adventure. I mean, you've got the world headquarters of theme park, Legoland.
Yeah.
Everything right there.
Well, maybe they figure if a Legoland can make it, a Six Flags can make it.
No, there's not one in Florida.
Probably a wise business.
New Orleans, Texas, Georgia is what I have right now.
Okay. Yeah. So, and they weren't. They weren't doing well financially, but they had these huge roller coasters they'd build every year, a new one, faster, bigger than ever before. They would shoot off fireworks every night. I got to go to the edge of my neighborhood. My neighborhood in Los Angeles was on the side of a mountain, basically. And you could look over down into the valley, and right there at the bottom of the valley was Six Flags, and they'd shoot off fire. So you can go to – we had this sweet spot. It was the corner of my neighborhood. It was literally on a cliff, and it had a basketball court. You'd go there and shoot hoops and overlook the mountains and all that kind of stuff, and then you'd look down and see Six Flags. But you can go there every night and watch fireworks shoot off when it got dark every night. That was pretty cool. Until we finally figured it became a fire hazard in Los Angeles.
Especially certain times of the year.
Certain times of the year, summertime, you end up shutting that baby down. Fireworks, not a good idea.
You know, I've always thought about, like, the housing behind Magic Kingdom and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a phenomenal fireworks show.
Yeah.
It's great. But it's also 20 minutes every single night.
And
eventually that would get old, I would think.
I never got tired of it.
Okay.
Well, it was cool. I mean, fireworks.
Okay.
Fireworks are cool.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
No, I was not a fan of being, you know, in a fire zone. And I did have to evacuate my house twice. Because the wall of fire was coming. That's a scary feeling. But, you know, take the good with the bad. All right. William Quackenbush will be with us here at the bottom. My wife just sent me just something very disturbing. This has nothing to do with anything. Okay. Apparently a 38-year-old man was just arrested for exposing himself to a woman and a teenager in the Target parking lot right there on Immokalee and I-75. That's my Target!
Oh, really? That's your Target?
That's the one you pass. If you see it when you go up 75. Yeah, that Target.
Huh.
Apparently, he had been busted before for doing this.
Trench coat?
No. If you'd like the details.
I mean, you opened the door.
Yeah, sure. It was a dude in a BMW. Nice car. But he apparently was driving around with no pants on.
Oh.
But you couldn't see it first.
Yeah, because he's in his car.
And then found a teenage girl sitting. The mom went in to go shop. Teenage girl stays in the car, which, as a parent, red flag right there.
Pervert.
I don't think you leave like a 13-year-old girl alone in a car at a Target parking lot that's, you know, 30 seconds from the highway. I just seem to think that's bad parenting. Bring the kid in with you. So he started exposing herself to her, and then somebody else.
Hmm.
But they got him. Got his license plate.
Good.
Cops got him. He's arrested.
Good.
That's my Target. It's not supposed to happen in Naples, Florida, for crying out loud. Goodness gracious. All right, let's get back to sports. Great news in the state of Florida. Chris will have all the details. Time now for a SportsCenter rundown. Here's Chris.
All right, the FHSAA has voted to allow fall sports, including football, to start on August 24th. Most high school football programs will play their first games on September 4th. Chicago Bulls have fired head coach Jim Boylan after two seasons. They announced today Oakland Athletics outfielder Ramon Laureano's suspension for charging the Astros bench reduced from 6 to 4 games. Source told ESPN's Jeff Passan. And we got some bubble action from the hockey right now. Coyotes, Avalanche, 2-2. Second period.
Very good. I'm getting some texts here on Six Flags and, oh, Tattoo Guy. The Georgia Six Flag has the fifth largest roller coaster.
Oh, I thought he was joking. Okay. I thought he was serious. That's funny. That's a good one.
Catholic Farter, other than the weather, Craig, what is good about California? Well, I'm going to tell you.
Girls.
California Girls. Good song, too.
Yeah. Love Katy Perry.
I was thinking more of the Beach Boys, but that's fine.
No, she has a song called California Girls.
She does. And that's a decent song.
With Snoop. Come on. Snoop doesn't put out bad music.
Yeah. Well. Oh, it's funny you mentioned that. Not to get on a tangent. I was flipping the channels last night, late last night.
How great was it?
Soul Plane.
Soul Plane.
I watched Soul Plane last night.
No. Last night on Shark Week, they had an hour-long special on Snoop Dogg providing commentary, his own commentary, off the cuff on shark attacks.
For shizzle.
Laugh out loud funny.
Really?
Laugh out loud. What you doing in the boat, cuz? Look below you. Look below you. That's a big-ass shark, cuz. It was fantastic.
It was
hilarious. And it took me like 5 minutes to be like, whose voice is that? And then they kind of pan over to Snoop in the studio, and he's burning one and just watching some shark attacks.
That's hilarious.
It was called, Shark Sizzle, something like that.
Shark Sizzle?
Yeah, something like that. It was very funny.
Yeah. Soul Plane, the star power in that movie, the lineup?
Next level.
There's a lot of stars in that movie.
Yeah, well,
for a movie that's that bad.
You had Kevin Hart as an up-and-comer.
Yeah, he owned the plane.
Owned the plane, yeah.
Snoop's flying the plane.
Right. It's Tom Arnold's family, right?
Tom Arnold is in there. Yeah. Token white guy on the plane.
Yeah. That movie is so funny.
It's funny and bad at the same time. But no, Catholic Farter. Yeah, other than the weather in California. Now, I will say this. The weather in California, it's not just spectacular. It's beyond spectacular. It really is.
Well, Southern California.
Right.
Northern California, cold.
Good point. Good excellent point. Like, it freezes in the summertime in San Francisco, and a fog comes in off the bay. Like, you saw a little bit in the golf tournament this weekend. They were wearing sweaters. Yeah. And then the funny thing about L.A., depending on where you are, whether you're in a valley, mountain, or coastal, you could have a 40-degree swing on any day. Like, I lived in a valley in North L.A. County. Like, it could be 112 with no humidity, mind you. 112, you go drive 40 minutes to the coast, go to Malibu, and it'll drop down to 61, and you'll be freezing at the beach. And but generally, with the lack of humidity and the clear skies every day, it is beautiful. It is. There's no doubt about it. Pretty good. All right. Let's not get too distracted here. Don't forget William Quackenbush coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk some football. Speaking of football, Chris, a couple of sound bites we left on the table here with Sound Street. As long as we're talking college football, Florida State, Mike Norvell. I mentioned this yesterday. He's had a problem keeping this team together. Had a star defensive lineman want to boycott the team earlier because of the George Floyd situation. He said he talked to all of his players individually. He didn't. Now he's got three wide receivers saying that there's no transparency with all the COVID testing. And they're tweeting out that this is ridiculous and thinking about boycotting again. Here's Mike Norvell. He says, contrary to some tweets, he and his assistants have been very transparent with their players.
Coming off the field, just made aware of some tweets and I guess messages that were sent off from a couple of players that were not here today at practice. You know, we'll address those with any questions. You know, as we go throughout, it's obviously disappointing to see what was said. You know, we've been very open and transparent throughout this process. We've had a voluntary camp. We've had voluntary summer access. We've been very transparent throughout all aspects.
All right, so that's Mike Norvell. Here is some more saying that he is just flat out honest with his players.
I've been very transparent with every player that I've talked to, and with our entire team. Everybody had an opportunity to ask questions. We had good back and forth the other night in our team meeting, and just continuing to urge guys to make the proper decisions when they're away from the facility, and then following protocol when they're here at the facility.
Do you get the feeling that it's just? I mean, this is a rough start for Florida State. New coach coming after a disastrous Willie Taggart era. I feel bad for you Seminole fans out there.
But you never heard this from players.
Heard what?
With Taggart. You never heard anything really bad about Willie Taggart. He was a terrible coach and leader of a program.
They probably liked him because he didn't work him very hard. They didn't get him in shape. He didn't make him run. Oh, yeah, this guy's great, right?
Could there be some of that there?
I think so.
I don't think with the Marvin Wilson stuff.
No.
I think maybe with this, though. I don't know. But I see where they're coming from if they are only testing once a week.
You think this is a coach going in the other direction?
No, I think this might be a coach that's a little too hard on some players, and they don't like it. They committed to a different coach.
Maybe.
They didn't commit to this coach.
Maybe. Could be. Could be.
Speculative on my part.
That's what we do for a living.
Sorry.
We speculate. All right, on to the NFL. First of all, 7 NFL officials will opt out due to concerns of coronavirus. They'll get $35,000 stipend and their jobs guaranteed next year. Bill Belichick says Cam Newton is a hardworking kid, quote unquote. Now, there's a couple of things going on with Seattle I want to get to. One is really funny. But first, it all starts with the Jets and, of course, Jamal Adams, who's now with Seattle. Jets defensive coordinator Greg Williams said, I think Jamal Adams might get bored out in Seattle with their basic cover 3. Well, Pete Carroll caught wind of that on a radio show, and he answered back, yeah, but we don't make as many mistakes as the Jets do on defense with our safeties. So, hey, a little back and forth. I like it.
Well, I mean, I hear what Greg Williams is saying. I mean, and since Pete Carroll showed up to Seattle, they run a cover 3.
Yeah.
They don't play man-to-man. They run a cover 3. They'll, run man-to-man underneath, obviously, but safeties drop back, and the free safety plays the center of the field, and the Cam Chancellor type, which is the role I think that Jamal Adams is going to be, he plays down low in the box and plays more of that hybrid linebacker safety type.
From about 2011 to 2016, that worked pretty good.
And nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Nothing wrong with that at all. When it was working there, it was the best defense in football.
Legion of Boom. Yeah.
But I hear what Greg Williams is saying. I don't know how multiple the Jets were in defense.
Yeah.
I'd imagine more so than Seattle, though.
He seemed to say it was like next level stuff. I don't know. Who can I listen to? Greg Williams or Pete Carroll? Who's got more credibility with what they're doing? I mean, Greg Williams is still trying to.
No, Greg Williams is a hell of a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
I mean, he withstood Bountygate.
True. Well, he also.
He had to change his hair color and everything.
He instigated Bountygate, let's be honest.
But it wasn't like he was the only defensive coordinator going out there saying, hey, let's knock somebody out of the game, and the players had their own little pool going on.
Right.
That happened across the league. They got caught.
Yes, they did.
The Saints have been in the crosshairs of the NFL, it feels like, since then as well.
One player that Pete Carroll will not have on defense for Seattle is corner Kima Sivarand out of Oklahoma State. Have you heard this story? This is fantastic.
Yes.
This might be my favorite story of the week.
Yes.
He was released. He was undrafted. He had a massive signing bonus of $2,000.
Two grand.
And they cut him because he tried to sneak a female into the team hotel. Again, this is COVID. This is force majeure. This is new. We don't do that. We don't bring in people that haven't been tested. But my favorite part of my favorite story, tried to disguise her like a football player. Must have looked like a kicker or a wide receiver.
Well, that's right? What I'm thinking. It can only be a kicker, right?
Right.
It can only be or a punter.
So, and he didn't like put pads on or anything, but probably rolled in with some his sweats, team gear, maybe a knit cap, roll in.
It's just so stupid.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. This is not the NBA bubble where players are not allowed to leave. It's not. These players can go grab dinner in the after they're done with their workouts or whatever. Right. They're allowed to go out and grab dinner.
Right.
Meet her in the parking lot. Go somewhere else. Yeah. Or don't go somewhere else. Just meet her in the parking lot.
Right. Why you got to sneak her back into the team?
Good grief.
And during camp, he probably has a roommate, right?
No, that's part of the deal. Everybody has their own rooms.
Oh, for safety?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Getting lonely in there, huh?
Well, get lonely in there. That's fine, but just don't be, partners in there.
Go be unlonely somewhere else.
Somewhere else, yes. You're testing the integrity of your sort of bubble.
Kima. How about that?
But yeah, I mean, when you're especially when you're an undrafted guy, you got to know. I can't give them a reason to cut me.
Right.
I can't
be perfect.
I can't be the guy that says, you know what? There's that off the field thing. We're just going to move on from. No, you got to be the perfect teammate. You got to be the perfect player for your head coach.
Got to be the guy. Yeah. This is poor. I wonder what Mike Gundy thought when he heard this story. Former coach. That's one of his players.
I don't know.
Right there.
His players haven't exactly worked out by the time they got to the NFL. Right. Had a few.
Yeah.
Had a few that have worked out, but on the whole, they have not worked out.
Yeah.
Justin Blackmon. They had the corner that was drafted by the Browns a few years ago. That didn't work out. Brandon Whedon didn't work out. Not a lot of pro success.
James Washington's still in the league. Wide receiver. Big wide receiver. Mediocre.
Yeah. You know what? Talking fantasy, that's a heady play? Well, it's a sneaky name. You look at what the number two receiver in Pittsburgh has done over the years.
Yeah.
Hell of a fantasy player.
Yeah.
I mean, when AB was opposite Juju was putting up phenomenal number. Like, the number two receiver in Pittsburgh, if that is James Washington,
could
be a sneaky little play, late round draft pick, guy to keep your eye on the waiver wire.
You got Big Ben back this year.
That's what I'm saying, though. You get Big Ben back. I think James Conner's a great play this year. Eric Ebron, he'll get back to all pro form this year. Write it down. You know what? I'll write it down. I don't even need you to write it down.
Really?
I'll write it down.
Okay.
Eric Ebron will be back to all pro form. And Pete with this, Baltimore's going to run 16-0. Pump the brakes, big guy. Pump the brakes. 16-0? No way.
No.
No way. Not in that division.
No.
Absolutely not.
The Browns might even upset him.
They beat him last year.
Right.
They
badly
spanked him last year. Nick Chubb still running all over that defense.
All right, don't forget the Boston Red Sox tonight, 99.3 ESPN against the Yankees. Big rivalry from the Bronx. Oh,
I think the Yankees might score 20.
Every game. Every game. Starts at 6:30, first pitch at 7:30. The Red Sox in Southwest Florida are brought to you by Naples Wealth Planning. Coming up, William Quackenbush. Next, we're going to talk some Clemson and ACC football. Stay with us. Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Into a platform where anyone can spew nonsense. Sounds like these guys. Like our Facebook page, 99.3 ESPN Radio. This is Sheman and Shepherd.
Sheman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. On a Friday. Been talking a lot of college football lately, so we thought that we'd bring friend of the program, William Quackenbush, on from the Clemson Tiger Radio Network and get his perspective with everything that has been going on. He joins us now. William, how you been?
Craig, it's been a crazy week, my man. I'm glad. I just signed off the radio for the last time. I feel like I've done a month's worth of radio. How are you doing?
About the same. About the same, but at least we're kind of talking football. Definitely want to get your perspective on a lot of stuff. And I'll kind of work back as to what happened in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 in a moment. But I remember yesterday we were on the air, and we saw this announcement that the ACC presidents were meeting at 4:30 for a final word on whether – and then we really didn't hear anything other than, for now, we're still going to move forward. Did you hear of anything else that came out of that meeting of the ACC presidents? Because when I first heard that, I was kind of holding my breath like, uh-oh, here's another one that's going to drop out. Or maybe not, but – as of now, no, they're still playing football.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, we didn't expect a whole lot from that meeting yesterday. And then, you've got John Thrasher who comes out and says it's going to be the final say. Now, to me, the final say is going to be when the ball's kicked off. And the final say might not be until the last second rolls off the clock at the end of the season, to be honest with you, because it does feel like an hour-by-hour, day-by-day type of deal as people continue to to break down the information and apply the things that we're learning in the best way that we can. It was another example. I mean, I kind of vented on Florida State, but this whole offseason, the communication from Florida State has been outrageously bad. You had Mike Norvell, who didn't exactly, to the point that his players would like, explain how much contact he'd have with them regarding Black Lives Matter, and you had a player mutiny there, and then you got the AD talking about how often they get tested, and then you got a little player mutiny there, and now you got the president of Florida State going into this meeting and going, yeah, this is going to be the final say. And everybody else, I'm sure, is like, whoa, we're not doing that today. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because, it didn't make any sense. I mean, we all thought it was sort of doom and gloom there for a little bit. But it wouldn't make any sense for the ACC to have just gotten finished convincing the Big 12 two days before, hey, you guys should probably do some other stuff, but we'd like you to keep playing with us.
Yeah.
And then pull the plug, like, right after. I mean, that didn't make any logical sense. So this might have been just some really bad phrasing. And it would not have been the first time that Florida State led us down that rabbit trail this offseason.
Well, yeah, I mean, Florida State, I mean, we were just talking before you came on, Mike Norvell had a very, very tough start there at Florida State. But, you know, you just laid out that scenario. Hey, a couple days ago, we'll talk the Big 12 into joining us, and then that would look silly to turn around and not play. But almost a very similar timeline happened with the Big 10. You know, they released their schedule last Thursday, and then on Saturday we hear these rumblings that the presidents are going to shut it all down, and they did. So I'm still trying to scratch my head. What changed in a 72-hour period in the Big Ten? I can't figure that out, but obviously the ACC, SEC, Big 12 are not as concerned as, say, the Big Ten and Pac-12 right now.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it is really fascinating to see sort of the war of ideology and the war of words play out publicly, where everybody's got sources that are telling them, you know, there's no way we can play based on what we've just seen, knowing full well that there's other, you know, medical experts telling other leagues that they can play based on what they've seen. Here's the interesting part of it. The Pac-12 was very specific. When they canceled football, they broke it down in like a 7 or 8 page document, 12 pages, whatever it was. We broke it down on our show here in the upstate of South Carolina, where they basically said, here are the things we're not comfortable with. Here's what we're hoping to see in the spring. Here's what we're hoping to see from an institutional and conference standpoint. And we think once we see these things, once the spread goes down a little bit in our locales, then perhaps we can move forward. The Big Ten gave us nothing. The Big Ten gave us nothing but, in my opinion, just the sources that were feeding a lot of, you know, interesting narratives, I'll say, about the entire nation. And they were essentially designed to say, how can anybody possibly play football when this happened?
Right.
We don't know what the Big Ten was looking at. I watched the Kevin Warren interview with Dave Revson on Big Ten Network and was astonished. Here's a guy, his first year as commissioner, who looked totally powerless up there to stop what was happening. He looked like he had basically no say in it because he had nothing to offer. He spoke for 20 minutes, said nothing. He didn't answer the questions about Nebraska going rogue. He didn't answer the questions about what changed from, as you said, releasing a schedule and then less than a week later saying we're not going to have a schedule at all. And as of yet, I mean, we're sitting here, 3 days later, the Big Ten still has not released word one of the medical advice that they got from last Wednesday, Thursday until this past Tuesday that said why they are canceling sports. At the same time, you have, you have the ACC, you've got the Duke doctor, Cameron Wolf, who's the head of their committee, who's saying, yeah, we think we can play. And here's why. I really think part of this, too, is, and nobody's come out and said this, but the folks who are advising the Pac-12 and the folks who are advising the Big Ten, it feels like they're looking at the specific plans of those leagues going, you know what, we've got some major questions. And it looks like some folks have maybe looked at the SEC, ACC, and the Big 12 plans and gone, you know what, you guys can go ahead. It may be more about, the way that the conferences have planned, the way the conferences have invested. I mean, one thing we've learned in the last couple of days is that the SEC and ACC, particularly big schools like Clemson, just a few minutes from where I am right now, have already invested in a lot of EKGs and heart scans and things like that, that in certain other places around the country, it seemed like a thing that folks were maybe learning about for the first time. There may have been maybe some greater developments in some of those areas. So I think all that sort of came together in a weird, weird way. And I would love to know what the Big Ten saw that everybody else didn't, because honestly, if you're sitting on medical science that says that it's not safe for student athletes to play and other leagues have student athletes playing,
right,
then you almost have like a moral and ethical duty to share that with people, don't you?
Absolutely. We were mentioning that all week long. Totally agree with you on that. Talking with William Quackenbush from the Clemson Tiger Radio Network. And then there's the other stories. Okay, so like all these campuses are going to have 20, 30, 40,000 kids coming onto campus. Whether you're not playing football or you are playing football, I believe the Big Ten and the Pac-12, they're still going to practice and they're still going to do everything except play for 3 hours on a Saturday. So that part's a little weird to me. And you could make the argument that the football players are safer in their football atmosphere, not necessarily a bubble, but atmosphere, more so than any other subset of students on campus. I look at Clemson and Dabo, and that Xanadu-like facility they have over there. I mean, they could be bubbled up there forever and be fine with the multiple testing. It seems to me the Clemson Tiger type players are pretty safe.
I would agree. And look, I'm not sure that that's the case necessarily everywhere with every program. I mean, we're seeing already a little bit of a mini uprising at Syracuse, where there are a lot of athletes there that are pretty upset, at least a few athletes there that are pretty upset. And we've seen in pockets that there are some places that need to do a better job. But we also saw on Twitter, and it kind of broke my heart, we saw a lot of players that are like, hey, man, if I go home, I mean, like, people get shot in my neighborhood. Like, yeah. And that's tragic to think. You know, you're going to let people on campus. You're presumably going to let, football players on campus as well. You're going to let them stay and be around all these students and do classes if they were already playing. And why is that, why is it safe for students and not for student athletes to be able to do what they're on campus to do? Or you're going to send them home. And a lot of athletes were saying, I don't want to go home. I'm here so that I don't have to be at home.
Right.
And that struck a chord with me as somebody who spent a lot of time around student athletes. That is certainly the story of a lot of them who are trying to make better lives for themselves and trying to escape some things that they don't like back at home. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, look, it doesn't make any sense to draw that line in the sand when you're going to have the potential liability, you would think, of tens of thousands of people. Why a few hundred athletes are any different? And I do believe it comes down to amateurism and trying to protect what I'm going to call the facade of amateurism. I think there's some good stuff about amateurism, especially when you talk about, you know, paying out salaries and what that would mean, actually the negatives that would be for the student athletes and things that they don't get now, that they do get now that they would not get if they were paid like salary employees, some benefits and some access to rights and things like that, that if you're in a general workplace environment, you wouldn't get. But I'm telling you, I think a lot of these places, they do not want the potential liability down the road, 10, 20 years down the road, of heart problems or things happening. They felt like they couldn't get a handle on it at the time, but and now they're either on the hook for it or they're having to pay legal fees for a lawsuit. My thing is, and I don't know if you guys agree or disagree with this, I don't know that any of those concerns go away in the spring. So if this is a liability issue, I think we're kidding ourselves about the spring. I mean, amateurism is not going to change going into the spring, and the liability part of this is not going to change going into the spring. So I think if those are the reasons not to play in the fall, I don't see why there's any evidence that those would be reasons that we can then play in the spring. That just doesn't make any sense to me. It seems a little bit disingenuous to bring that up.
Well, you touched on something. I won't get into it here, but do yourself a favor. Read the LA Times from a couple of days ago. They did an interesting piece. That's the real reason the Pac-12 and the Big Ten shut down is because those students were about ready to unionize, become employees, and then ruin amateurism. And that's really the reason they put the brakes on all this, because they wanted all these health benefits. But that's a story for another day. I do want to ask you, Dabo Swinney, I'm presuming he's got a pretty hefty bonus in his contract for winning national championships. He says, oh, yeah, if we have just a Power 3, this championship would be legit. It counts. I don't know what the other Power 2 are going to do in the spring. Maybe have their own championship. Maybe they'll have a split championship this year. I don't know. Is this an asterisk championship this year if we play with these three major conferences or not?
You know, it's interesting. I don't think so. It'll depend on, I think, how well the fall season goes and, frankly, how well the spring season goes. I'm not even sure in the moment where the champion is crowned if we're going to be able to make that judgment, if we're going to have two champions, or if sort of the quote-unquote champion of the fall has to wait to see if there's a better champion in the spring. I don't really know how we collectively are all going to decide that we want to do that. I don't see it as an asterisk because there were teams that freely chose, or leagues that freely chose to opt out.
Mm-hmm.
And there were leagues that freely chose to opt in. it's kind of like Major League Baseball. To me, yeah, sure, there are fewer games, but somebody's going to win. And these were sort of stipulations that were agreed upon in the environment that we're currently in. Everybody's operating among the same rules. And look, we might see this champion as you know, a little bit different than, you know, let's say Clemson wins this year. Around here, I think people will view it differently than the 2018 team that won a championship, or the 2016 team, or even the 1981 team that was voted the national champion in the AP poll that went undefeated. I feel like people will see it differently, sure, but there is no denying that everybody is playing under a quasi-similar set of rules this year. And so the effort to crown a champion, in my opinion, still goes on. And it can go on credibly because it's not as if, you know, some teams are playing four games and some are playing 10. And even if it turns out that some teams end up playing like four games, that'll probably largely be things that are under their control. Like the Cardinals right now in baseball,
yeah.
I don't know anybody crying crocodile tears for the Cardinals playing five games. If some teams to play 20, they got to get their own house in order. That's sort of on them at this point rather than everybody else saying, oh, because the Cardinals have, you know, they got to play 50 doubleheaders down the stretch or whatever, then we're just going to put an asterisk by the championship. I think everybody knows what the deal is, and so I think there's a great level of excitement for who might be able to cut down the net, so to speak, in this college football season.
William Qualkenbush is with us with the Clemson Tiger Radio Network. Your thoughts on Trevor Lawrence? He was leading the players when it looked like everybody was going to be canceled. He said, look, we want to play. And if there was anybody that could sit this one out and walk right up to the podium as the number one or number two pick in the NFL draft, it's him. He's more to lose than he has to gain. But he wanted to play. What did you think about that and him and spearheading all that? And then on the flip side, what if at the last second we do push this thing into the spring? He's not going to play in the spring and risk everything that close to the draft, would he?
Oh, no. I think a couple things here. First, I do think a lot of it is selflessness on Trevor's part, but I have pointed out this week, and I will continue to point out, that it is sort of in his own self-interest that the season is in the fall if he wants to play, because he knows that if the season's in the spring, he's not going to play.
Yeah.
I just think, me personally, if somebody's telling me I'm going to be drafted in the first two rounds of the NFL draft, no matter how late they push that draft back, no matter what concessions they make or how early that thing is in the 2021 portion of the calendar, why in the world would I play?
Right.
I don't think I would if I'm a top 100 draft pick that's going forward. Trevor Lawrence may be number one. So I think, you know, he knows that if he wants to play his last year of college football here, he's going to have to do it in the fall. The second thing is, I think there's sort of a two-part deal to this. Number one is, his teammate, Darian Renter, is a walk-on from right up the road, about 30 minutes away in Anderson, South Carolina, played at T.O. Hanna High School. He's a fifth-year senior who's come back. He sort of took Trevor under his wing, and there's a spiritual aspect to that where he kind of, you know, he and Trevor in the same Bible study, they've gotten really close along those lines. And Darian has become sort of a leader on the team as a walk-on. He's got a gravitational personality. It was Darian who sort of reached out across the country to the West Coast to try to bring the Pac-12 folks on board. And it's Trevor who sort of waded in almost like one slow step in front of the other into leadership. This is not a guy who's been looking for the spotlight. It's actually the guy who has been sort of trying to hide himself from the spotlight and shield himself and protect himself from the spotlight his first couple of years. But he's also not a guy who's doing this begrudgingly. I don't think he's just out there tweeting what he thinks people need to hear from him as the quote-unquote face or voice of college football. I think he's saying what's in his heart, and he's saying what's in his mind. And to me, that's a great step for Trevor Lawrence as a junior, because he's not a guy who's doing this begrudgingly or because he feels like nobody is, so I have to. He's doing this in a way that he wants to, and he's doing it with Darian by his side. And Darian is probably a more willing and ready communicator, somebody who thinks very seriously about these things, very, very advanced in terms of maturity and his willingness to tackle issues. He was one of the leaders of the group on campus that organized the Black Lives Matter rally here locally in Pickens County just a few weeks ago. And so Darian, I think, has done him a lot of good this offseason too. And Trevor, sort of, I think Darian's influence has buoyed him a little bit more to say what he needs to say, to understand the power of his voice, and to use it responsibly. And that's paying off right now, because I agree with you. If not for Trevor Lawrence, if not for these players across the country coming together along these five ideals to get ready to play, I'm not sure that there was the institutional will without the players speaking up for anybody to go through a fall season given the risk involved.
Very interesting. And, William, always a pleasure to have you on. Stay healthy. Let's keep it together for a few more weeks, and hopefully we'll have you on for week one to preview Clemson's opening week game. How's that sound?
One day at a time, Craig. Appreciate you having me on. Always good to visit with you guys. Y'all be safe as well.
Thank you very much. William Quackenbush with the Clemson Tiger Radio Network. Nice to talk football, wasn't it? So anyway, glad to have him on. All right. We got a lot going on later on the 4 o'clock hour around the corner. Don't forget, we have the NBA bubble report. A little bit of action last night that was interesting from the NBA we'll get to as well. But right now it is time for Craig's Friday Sports Test, brought to you by the Boathouse on Naples Bay. Go to their website, boathouseonnaplesbay.com. They got delivery. They got takeout, whatever you want. From noon to 8, they got dine-in, they got boat-in. You can ride your boat right up to the dock and order. Everybody talks about the mouth-watering filet mignon sliders. They got short rib ravioli, lobster ravioli. It's fantastic. So go ahead and check that out, our good friends at the Boathouse in Naples Bay. We've got gift cards available for our contestant for Craig's Friday Sports Test for the Boathouse in Naples Bay. 3 questions. Each one you get right, an additional $25 at the Boathouse in Naples Bay. What I need from you now is caller number 9 at 239-337-ESPN, 239-337-3776. Craig's Friday Sports Test, brought to you by the Boathouse in Naples Bay. Let's get it going on here. It's Friday. Sheeman and Shepard, 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
This is the Friday Sports Test with Sheeman and Shepard, brought to you by the Boathouse on Naples Bay on 99.3 ESPN.
All right, here we go. Craig's Friday Sports Test. Our contestant is Jose in Lehigh. Jose, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Very good, man. Very good. We're all big fans of the Boathouse in Naples Bay, so let's see if we can get you some gift certificates there, up to $25 for each correct answer, up to $75 total. These are 3 sports questions from this week. So are you ready to go?
You've got a hint as well, Jose. I'm here for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can use Chris's lifeline on one of them. All right. Here is question number 1. What team won a 5 overtime game in the Stanley Cup playoff this week?
That will be our Tampa Bay Lightning.
There you go. That's $25. All right. Good job. That's a good start. You've got 2 questions left. We can try and get this up to 50 and 75, and you still have your lifeline available on one of them. Here is question number 2. What was the only team to go 8-0 inside the NBA bubble?
The Phoenix Suns.
That is correct. 2 for 2. You're up to $50 at the Boathouse on Naples Bay. All right. Our third and final question, and you can use Chris as a lifeline here. It's your last question. Let's get this up to $75 if you can tell me. For question number 3, what MLB team became the 4th team in Major League Baseball history to lose a game despite hitting 7 home runs in that game?
Just saw this yesterday, I think. Let's go.
You have a life. Okay, you have a lifeline.
Okay.
All right.
All right, Jose. This team lost to the Miami Marlins.
Toronto Blue Jays.
Yes.
Wait. What happened? What happened?
Where's my sound effects? There we go. All right, Jose, congratulations. You got all 3 right. That's $75 to the Boathouse in Naples Bay. Congratulations.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right, well done, man. Have a great weekend. Nicely done. How about that? Didn't it feel good after, you know, listening to me stammer around on things like Wikipedia and to have somebody come through like that? Go to the Boathouse on Naples Bay. Go to their website, Boathouse on Naples BoathouseOnNaplesBay.com.
Yeah, there you go. Living up to form.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. They got delivery, takeout, dine-in, filet mignon sliders, short rib ravioli, lobster ravioli.
Yes, Cougar Hunter, you are technically correct. The Buffalo Blue Jays.
Yes, but we weren't going to penalize anybody for
that.
No,
you got the right team.
Yes.
You're good.
All right.
Good job, Jose. That's what I like right there. You call up, you paid attention this week,
yeah.
And you're rewarded.
Yeah, not a lot of hemming and hawing like Pete. You know, it was crisp and clean and
yeah.
No caffeine, as they used to say.
I appreciate it. So all thank right. you.
And thank you to the Boathouse on Naples Bay. Boathouseonnaplesbay.com. Check out their web. Check out their menu. Oh, your mouth will water just by reading it. All right.
I got to tell you, those raviolis, the short rib raviolis you were talking about. I mean, filet mignon slider, that's going to be your three-hole hitter.
Right, right.
But like a sneaky four-hole, a lot of pop in the bat.
Yeah?
Short rib raviolis.
You like that?
Absolutely. Every yeah. time.
All right. Very good. Coming up, we got the 4 o'clock hour. I have some sound from the NBA. An amazing couple of things happening last night with the Trailblazers. But we also have the bubble report. And we'll do Craigopedia instead of Wikipedia, since Pete's not here, in the 4 o'clock hour. Then, the weekend's practically here.
Just an hour away.
1 hour away from kicking it off with Miley Cyrus, for crying out loud. Oh, it is happening. Sheeman and Shepard, 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.